Welcome to the Pen and the Yad. Rabbi Michael Siegel of Anshe Emet Synagogue in Chicago talks with author Jonathan Eig about this week's Torah portion of Truma. Who needs a synagogue anyway?
So what's your first memory of synagogues? Do you remember going to the synagogue as a young person? Was that part of your life?
Oh, yeah. I don't remember. Know what the first one would be. That's a really good question. Never thought about that.
It doesn't rank up there with your first kiss, your first.
My first baseball game. No, all of these things are fuzzy. Well, the first kiss isn't as fuzzy because I was a little older by that time. But when you're 5 and 6 years old and you start to have these memories that really last, you know, I certainly remember some of the early Seders. I remember going to the synagogue for the high holidays when I was little, even before I'd started religious school. I guess my earliest memories involve like the peripherals, like the fact that we were allowed to sneak out into the backyard of the synagogue. We went to a very small synagogue in Spring Valley, New York. And when the kids got bored, the parents would let us just go run around in the backyard a little bit. And that I remember more than I remember, you know, the service, obviously, because at that age, you know, being freed to play outside was much more memorable than being what was going on in the room, I guess.
I think a lot of us have those kind of memories of running around the halls on the high holidays or just hanging out with other kids or meeting new kids that are outside of your school in this world that met a couple times a week. When Hebrew school started, I think my first memory of going to synagogue was on Simchat Torah. I remember the flag and I remember this bright red candy apple and biting into it. And of course, it was I don't know if it was like a weapon or what, but it was a treat and it was just fun. And I just remember all the sights and sounds and being there with my grandfather, which was a big deal. And so, yeah, it's pretty warm, fun memories. I guess the reason I raise all this is because the very first thing Moses has the people do as a people, their very first project, is to build the Mishkan, to build this sanctuary in the wilderness, this indwelling place for God. And it's interesting because it must be important if this is going to be the very first thing that they do as they begin going forward to the promised land. And the tabernacle then becomes the precursor to the temple. And when the temple is destroyed, the synagogue is its successor. And the synagogue has been a fixture in the Jewish community. But now during COVID-19, we've discovered the internet, we've discovered technology, a new form of technology, I should say, Zoom and everything else, and people have discovered that you don't have to be in a physical place to go to synagogue. I saw an email from an older couple in our congregation who had a devil of a time getting on for the high holidays, but they seem to have perfected things and sent out an email saying, loved your Friday night Chavaya service, and we were so inspired afterward that we surfed for services afterward, and we went to this synagogue and this city and this synagogue and this city, and we watched this one as well. So people have discovered that you don't need to have walls to have a synagogue. And we're wondering at Anshe Emet, that's why we're doing a strategic plan on this, is what's the future? What should synagogues look like and why do we need them going forward?
Yeah, we're living through such an interesting time, and you know, there are lots and lots of institutions struggling with these same questions. You know, from businesses wondering whether people need to work together in the same physical space, theater companies wondering whether people need to be in the theater to enjoy a play. You know, the list goes on and on. Sports teams, obviously, sometimes they're eager to get people back physically because they need the money and budgetary issues. But it's also forcing people to ask the question of just essentially, what is it that we do and can we do it virtually? And how much of it comes from the feeling of being in a community, being in an audience, because I find it very hard personally to enjoy a lot of these experiences remotely because I don't have that energy around me. Whether you're cheering for a sports team or watching a performance in a theater or an opera, it's not the same just knowing that it's taking place live than if you're sitting at home on your couch. To me, it feels like I'm not part of that community. And that is something I think we're really struggling with right now.
How important is it that someone knows your name, that you feel like you belong here, that you're connected to something larger and that you matter in this space? I think all of that is part of it. I mean, the fact that your first memory of synagogue wasn't of, you know, sitting mesmerized by the rabbi or the cantor, which I find shocking. But the fact that you were outside in the backyard of the synagogue playing. This is my community. You know, I can come here and play because this is where I belong. And there's something to that, I think, that has been part of things from the beginning, but I think it remains today.
Yeah, I think that's right. And there's a discovery that comes with being in a crowd from being among other people and figuring out whether you belong with that crowd, whether this is the place that makes you feel complete, makes you feel special, makes you feel like this is where you're meant to be. And that's not just in synagogue. I think that's what you figure out when you go to a party, when you go to a college class, right? Oh, every once in a while you get that feeling and you say, yes, these are my people. This is where I belong. And I don't know that you can possibly get that in a Zoom when someone's calling out your name and saying, yes, hello, nice to see you. You're looking good today. It doesn't come close to offering that experience.
I hear exactly what you're saying. And it's interesting to me that we have been talking this entire time about the community itself without even mentioning God once, which is the center of the book of Exodus, is understanding in this week's portion of Truma. But before we move to that, I guess I want to posit this with you. It's my contention that the synagogue, the American synagogue, is the last place where Jews can still learn how to be part of a Jewish community.
Interesting.
And I want to add to that, because what the synagogue does, if you think about it, in a normal year when we're actually physically together, you would sit in a room that where all ages are represented, from very young to very old, where the socioeconomic bifurcations in the Jewish community don't exist. People are sitting together and we're all one community. Where does that happen today? Where does that, maybe in the movie theater, if we still go to those afterwards, where you do that in the dark, but, or in the opera, as you said, but it doesn't really happen for Jews anywhere else where you would actually engage in a common experience together that has ties to our past and our present. And it gives us a sense of belonging to something larger. That is a very, very vital aspect of what it means to be a Jew in the past, in the present. And I continue to believe that that's one of the vital functions of the synagogue going forward, even with the expanded technology.
Well, I certainly agree with you there. And it's one of the few places, certainly for Jews, it's one of the few places where you get this breadth of community. You know, we are all learning to put ourselves in little boxes with the internet and with social media. You only follow the people who are your friends or who think like you. And if someone disagrees with you politically, you can stop following them. But you can't do that in the synagogue. If you're really part of the community, you have to find a way, and often you wind up listening to people who have different opinions than you, or, you know, very different approaches to life. And that's one of the keys to being in a community that I think we are losing in other aspects of society right now.
Where else could you hear a talk and then go into a room with, again, this spectrum of different people and have a conversation about what you didn't like about the rabbi's sermon? Right? Even though I say that tongue in cheek. The reality is that I can't think of anywhere else that I do that. Sometimes people respond, you know, they'll tweet or they'll say this or that, but that's almost like in a bubble. Here, you say, oh, I really like what he had to say or she had to say, or I disagree with this point and this is why. I love the fact that when I walk into Kiddush, people walk up to me and say, I loved what you said, or I couldn't agree less with what you were saying. And then people kind of gather around and hear this conversation, and then I hear them talking about it, or, you know, that I think is what it's about. And where else do you get to do that? Where else do you have that kind of sense of trust, you know, or this willingness to talk to somebody who you don't know, right? Just because, well, we're all part of this community, so I guess I will talk.
Yeah. And, you know, it strikes me that some of that happens on college campuses, some of that happens in the workplace. But what's different here is that, just to bring God back into this, which I know, you know, you count on me for those reminders.
I do. Thank you. Thank you.
You know, here we're united in a kind of a value system, in a kind of a desire to be better people, to be a better community. And when that's at the core of it, it's very different from what you're getting if you're having debates or conversations on a college campus or in an office.
I think that's exactly right. It's a very different conversation, and maybe a little less guarded about your feelings as well. I do want to kind of stay with your suggestion that we talk about God, because I don't want to disappoint you. But I But I do want to say there was someone by the name of Isaac Abarbanel. He was a fascinating figure. He was the leader of a community during times of around the Inquisition. He was in disputations with Christians. He was a very fascinating figure. And one of the things that he said about the synagogue is, and I'm going to quote it, "God's intention behind the construction of the tabernacle was to fight the idea that God had abandoned the world and that God's throne was in heaven and remote from humanity." In other words, the synagogue made it possible for people to feel as though God was immanent and not transcendent. So it's a place where God actually, if not exists, is present, and that God isn't far away from us. Any thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think that's really important. We decide what places are holy, but once we decide and we declare something holy, and it's something special, and you wear a kippah when you set your foot in the door, you're carving it out as a special place where different rules apply, where we treat people differently, where you can have an argument with your rabbi because you know that you're doing it in this place of worship, right? I think that it changes the definition of everything. And that really gets to the core of our question. Do we need a physical space? I think we do. I think we need to differentiate that this is a place of higher hopes and aspirations, and a place that we congregate because we believe in something together. That togetherness is physical in part.
Yeah. I'm going to push this a little farther. The synagogue is making a statement. And as you said, you put a kippah on because you're acknowledging that the space that you're standing in is different. It has a different quality to it because the Jewish community has deemed it a holy space, right? And so when you walk in there, whatever your thoughts are about God, whatever your belief system is, when people stand up for the Amida, the message in the room is that God is present and God is listening. And you can decide to do with that time anything you want, but the larger messaging in the room is exactly what Abarbanel was saying. God is present. God isn't somewhere else. God hasn't abandoned us. We're here and now, and you can speak. God is in, the red light is on, start talking.
Right.
I think that's an important message that you don't get anywhere else. So what the synagogue is saying is live as if God is in the room. Mm-hmm. And for that moment, suspend whatever else your rational understanding of the universe and everything else, and join here with this communal moment where God has been present in the life of the Jewish people, and God is present today, and God is present in your life. So stand up and be part of that. I think that that is not something that you can get just by watching a synagogue service online. I think it's the presence of looking around a room and seeing everybody standing up with you. That moment and that sense of community and the intangibles that are taking place in the room are really vital. They're vital for the human experience. They're vital for the Jewish experience.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think that it gives a focus. Just the fact that all these people are coming together in one place gives a focus, right? There's a reason we're all coming together in one place. And then the fact that we're all doing something together, that we are concentrating on the same prayers, we're praying our own prayers, but we're doing it together in one place, it focuses the energy.
Well, we'll see where it goes. I hope people are filling out our survey, but we are building as well, just as Moses did in his time. We are constantly transforming, rebuilding, rethinking, and moving the institution forward. Thanks so much, Jonathan.
Thank you.